Testing, testing. Is that about right? All right. You want me to be louder?
No, you will take care of that.
I think if you get the microphone closer to you, it'll be closer.
We went through that last year. It was like... is that too close? It's a little close, isn't it?
No, it's good.
Maybe I have intimacy issues I didn't know about. We did this last year, for those of you who went through this. Okay. Hi, everybody. Barica told me that last year, it was the first year I've been mic'd, and she said it was the first year she ever heard anything I said. Is she in here?
No. Yes.
There? I'm telling on you. Oh, so now you're hearing it all.
I actually just to interrupt you for a second. For those of you who are busy, this is a role of my teachers, Merchant Samuel Lewis. And so we're willing to...
Oh, Gaia. Does this... It keeps kind of going down.
Was it slipping that way? Okay.
Okay, good. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So this is a quote from Pema Chodron. The peace that we are looking for is not peace that crumbles as soon as there is difficulty or chaos. Whether we're seeking inner peace or global peace or a combination of the two, the way to experience it is to build on a foundation of unconditional openness to all that arises. Peace isn't an experience free of challenges, free of rough and smooth. It's an experience that's expansive enough to include all that arises without feeling threatened. So I really feel in these times, these troubled times, that there's not much Dharma talk to make except for just about this. How do we come to terms with the times that we're living in? And there's two aspects that she's talking about, and one is cultivating this unconditional openness, and the other part is feeling unthreatened enough to be able to open to what is. So I want to sort of articulate on those two themes tonight. Our own Hazard Anayat Khan says in his language, in his words, the same thing. You can have all good things, wealth, friends, kindness, love to give, love to receive, once you have learned not to be blinded by them. Learn to escape from disappointment and from repugnance at the idea that things are not as you want them to be. So that's a really strong word, repugnance. Basically the question is, how friendly are we to each moment of our lives? Are we friends with each moment as it arises or not? And also this thing about being blinded by the wealth and friends and so forth. So that brings in the, it's pointing the finger to something else I'd like to talk about throughout the night, is the equanimity that is developed. So we're not going toward things and grasping, and nor are we feeling aversive and pulling away, but we're being able to just... I loved what Shabda read today at the Dharga, the Vajra poem about just being relaxed with whatever arises. I think we've, a lot of us have heard the way it was said by the Zen patriarch, the way is easy for those without preference, for those who don't pick and choose. I read something recently that Krishnamurti, after teaching for 30 years, said one night in a talk to the audience, "Well, don't you want to know my secret?" And they said, "Yes, yes, we've been coming for 30 years trying to figure it out." And he said, "I don't care what happens." So I don't think he was saying he didn't give a damn. That's not what he meant. He meant that he's confident enough within his own center that he's not attached to the results of his action. As it says in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says to Arjuna, you think of me, do the best you can, but you leave the results to me. The results of your actions are not in your hands. And so I think that's what Krishnamurti is saying, that he's dwelling in this place of relaxed openness to whatever arises. And he knows, he has the confidence within himself that he can greet and meet any situation that arises. So I think that's what he means when he says, "I don't care what happens." So this is a theme in almost all spiritualities, this, what I said, to be unthreatened. We have to have that confidence in the indwelling place in ourselves that is eternal and peaceful and full of goodness. Our Buddha nature. Hazrat Inayat Khan calls it our inherent divinity. So that's the first piece of our work then is to become confident in that place within us. I like some of the quotes that some of the traditions have given us. Azumi Shikibu, Japan Buddhism, and it's either the 10th or the 13th century, she said, "Where are you rushing to? You will see the same moon tonight wherever you go." Wow. And that's really poignant if you understand that for in that time, a convention, the moon was a symbol of consciousness, full awakened consciousness, because it's fully reflective. Our awakened state is a reflective state. Lala, "I was passionate and filled with longing. I searched everywhere. But the day that the truthful one found me, I was at home." This is Thich Nhat Hanh. "I laugh when I think how I once sought paradise as a realm outside of the world of birth. It is right in the world of birth and death that the miraculous truth is revealed. But this is not the laughter of someone who suddenly acquires a great fortune. Neither is it the laughter of one who has won a victory. It is rather the laughter of one who, after having painfully searched for something for a long time, finds it one morning in the pocket of his coat." So in Thailand, there's a famous temple with a very, very large Buddha in it that has always attracted pilgrims. But for a long time, the Buddha was a wooden Buddha that wasn't very attractive, and nobody really understood why it had so much baraka and charisma, and why so many people flock to this Buddha. But one day, in modern times, a monk was on a scaffold cleaning it, and his flashlight went through a crack in the wood and reflected back to him this dazzling light. So they uncovered it, and it was a solid gold Buddha. It had been covered over when there were invasions so that the Buddha wouldn't be stolen, melted down, and so forth. So that's the metaphor for our Buddha nature, this divine unity, inherent divinity, that we constantly want to keep uncovering. The Sufis say wiping the rust from the heart. It's like the sun is shining, but the clouds eclipse it, and then they move away. And it's not a one-time thing for most of us. It's something that we continually have to do, is see through these obscurations, or let them have their way, but then as they dissolve, then we see what's underneath them. The other day, Shabda talked about it being the bottom of the pool and then the surface. So we're constantly going back between the surface mind, the mundane mind, and our true nature. And I used to be a photographer, so I'm always, you know, it's that depth of field and the focus. What is in focus? The surface mind, the fluctuations of the surface mind, or the stillness that we truly are. And we have to keep remembering, relaxing into that, just settling back into the true nature that we are. Well, why is this so hard? Why can't it be easier?
Let us know.
Well, I don't know why it's so hard, but I do know that Gayan said, "What's in the way is the way." Is that how you said it? And so that is at least the gift. It's very hard to do this, but we have this gift that every time an obscuration comes up, it can be, we have this possibility of turning this poison into medicine. This is the composting of our garden path, of our heart path, is to turn the poison into medicine, or the enemy into the best friend. So when the obstacle arises, there is a method that can lead us through that obstacle into our inherent divinity. So I'd like to talk about that a little tonight. Before I do, I want to say just a little more about this settling into this place. Dogen says, when you find yourself at home, practice begins. So it's the starting point. It's also the goal. It's also the method. Oh, but it is also the starting point. We have to know this true nature before we can really make progress on any path. And I'd like to say that I think it doesn't matter what path we're on. We could be a Sufi universalist whose ultimate goal is to merge with God, or we could be a Bhakti Vaishnav who stays separate from God and sees God outside of himself and stays in a devotional relationship to God, or we could be a Buddhist and God is the interdependent web. It really doesn't matter what path, we still our beginning stage is we have to know how to settle into our true nature and know it's there and have confidence in it, in ourselves. And that is what would make us, distinguish us from the ordinary mind, the ordinary people. We like to think of ourselves as spiritual people on a spiritual path. Well, what makes us different? Because when anybody who's in the ordinary mind, in the surface mind, subject to these waves, all of us in that mind experience the fruitive mind, the envious mind, the jealous mind, the competitive mind. We just do. It's just the way that surface mind works. And none of us are immune from that. And yet we're working on a path that we want to declare that we're not caught in those traps. And the only difference then between us and ordinary people who are caught in the ordinary mind would be if we do know how to shift gears, to shift the focus and come back into this place of unity, oneness, peacefulness, the mode of goodness. So Trungpa Rinpoche and now Pema Chodron is teaching from what he called the soft spot. And that's this place in us of vulnerability. And Trungpa actually, according to Pema, said that it's like having an open wound that that somebody bumps and breaks it open. I mean, it's very, very tender. And that's this place in us that is very close to our inherent goodness. And it's the place in us that we keep all these obscurations. A lot of them have developed as we've tried to protect that place and harden around it. So it's in there where our fear is, where we're the most vulnerable. So when we say what's in the way is the way, or the way in is through, what we're going to go through the obscurations into our place of vulnerability. And right there, if we rest in that soft spot, we're very close, if not already there, in this place of inherent goodness. So I'd like to ask you to close your eyes, if you would, and you don't have to change your position. Just close your eyes, feel your breath, wherever you feel it, in your belly, rising and falling like the ocean waves, or the chest rising and falling. Or the air passing through your nostrils. Just feel this movement of life expanding and contracting. So I ask you to take the first thing that comes to mind when I ask you to conjure up now in your mind a situation or the image of a person that either brings up in you intense desire or intense aversion. It should be easy in this world to find something aversive. So I'm going to ask you to do what I'm ultimately going to ask you not to do, but I want you to get the image clear and go ahead and get the story, too. Why? What's the story around this situation or person that makes you want to grasp at it or push it away? So just enough so that you can create a sensation inside yourself that you can feel of desire, longing, or aversion. And then I'm going to ask if you could try to move the fixation away from the story and the image and try to concentrate now on the sensation that you're feeling inside. Move off of what was the trigger and move into the inner life of what you feel inside in response to that. And just stay with that, since the sensations that are arising, feel them fully. And then ask yourself, what is feeling this? You can move back even further then into knowing yourself as the one who is aware of that sensation. So that's a fast little version of the practice that Pema Chodron teaches, and she calls it finding your soft spot. So I don't know, it's hard to do things like that artificially, but if you get sort of a taste of it, it's something that we have several more meditation sessions to go, and it's a practice you can pull into your meditation sessions if you feel yourself feeling, thinking about something that is triggering you in one way or another, that's creating a contraction, to feel into the contraction itself and take your mind and energy off the fixation, off the object out there, and come into the sensations that are happening inside. And just be with them and open to them fully and see if they increase or decrease, dissolve, and also you come closer to the one who's aware, because as you leave the thinking mind and go into the feeling tone of it, you're very close to feeling yourself as consciousness, as awareness. But if you're trapped and tormented by the thinking mind, you're very far away from it. Does that make sense? Did anybody have anything that they could speak about that happened just now, or any in relation to any of this?
I loved every part of it, but the one part I didn't relate to, associating the soft spot with an open wound rather than the soft spot.
The soft way?
The soft spot would be, prior or before the... And open wound is just a very wounded stage. But that we're going into a space...
Yes, yeah. Yeah, I think the wound, the open wound was the when it gets reactivated and that we have to keep going back in. And it's the last place we want to go, but we have to open to the to what we're experiencing in order to get underneath it. And our whole society, we've been sort of conditioned to hide it, protect it, defend it, push it away. But it's really the way into our the best part of us.
What do you suggest in this setting? Practice was, you know, super easy. how would you guide us when we're in the midst of confusion?
I think, to me, that we have to be in self-witnessing all the time, that we're doing these practices to train our minds to go in instead of going out. And so as I said, what's going to distinguish us from ordinary people or people who aren't on a spiritual path? They're completely lost in the apparent reality, and we are training ourselves to always keep coming back in to what's happening within. So our eye, our witness eye, is always. I always think of that as the third eye, is the eye that's turned in, that's always watching, and so both are going on simultaneously. But there's a practice of dance. I forgot what Janet Adler's practice. It's anyway, it has authentic dance. The dancers are out here, but the witnesses are just as important. And the witnesses are trained in that practice to do like a figure eight. Like they see what's out there, then they come back in. How do I feel that? It's just this figure eight of with your dance with the apparent reality and what's in here. And I think that's how we're training ourselves to always be carrying that self-witnessing with us. So it's arising simultaneously with whatever's happening out there, and that we don't get lost out there in the apparent reality.
Separate the sensation from the trigger, from what triggered it. And then I had the kind of, you know, perception of, hey, this sensation is mine.
You was what?
Of that this sensation is mine.
Yes, right.
It's not, you know,
right.
It's out there.
Right.
It's mine, and that's, I know it's a real, fundamental shift.
Thank you. It makes my whole night. Thank you. That's it. That's the very thing. I was just teaching at the Southwest Sufi community, and somehow in one of my classes, I heard myself say, let's have a more perception, not projection. Yeah. We're going to make a bumper sticker out of it. But that's the very, very thing. And if you had that experience once, now nurture that, because we just get so lost out there. And yeah, it's in here. It doesn't matter what's happening out there. What matters is our response to it. And we can say that, but if we're really going to be spiritual beings and not just like everyone else, we have to learn to actually constantly be doing that.
Yeah. That reminds me of Sam, he'd say, "Don't react!" He'd yell out.
There are two things of business in the practice for which this is the gesture, which is the gesture of noticing when you have a reaction, but just stopping and noticing.
Beautiful.
And I find it interesting that if you're rhythm, you Rudolf Steiner develop movement thing, this gesture is the gesture for the gut sound, so God can be thought, I think of and God as being the noticing of that space in between what I'm witnessing and what I am, the witness right there. It's just that one moment.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Nice. Thank you.
It was impactful for me, that last question. At first my brain was like, what are you wanting me to ask? It was... ask who's feeling this. And there was this, oh, this is just the body. This body, this nervous system reacting to a previous stimulus. And the one, the true one, is untouched.
Beautiful. Great, you all made my night. I don't want to be wasting time up here. Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Darvesh, in fact, you know, on the opposite side of wasting time and doing this practice this way tonight, it's almost stunning how quickly sensation dissolves by contacting it in that way. It's such a direct path, and I'm just contemplating that in terms of the ordinary mind, where it will, you know, be in process and, you know, on the surface level, and here it's all just about contact, and through that the self-liberating quality of the awareness of it, and the number of sensations, you know, just by contacting one. Mm-hmm. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
I have a really difficult one that I don't want to bring up in public, but I'm just speaking it now because you know I have to leave.
So just a little clearer for us.
A very difficult one.
I heard the
grief and it's more the grief and pain of a humanitarian issue that you feel it so deeply, and it's a chronic situation.
You're still not dividing the story from your sensations.
Mm-hmm. It's difficult to do the separation.
Yeah. Most of the world wouldn't be able to do that. I mean, it's a huge leap to begin to divorce the trigger from your sensations. And we habitually go back to the trigger, and that's the story, the image. Believe me, I read alternative news at least an hour a day. I mean, I make myself look at it all. So it's not
alternative news.
What?
You look at the alternative news.
Well, the real news that's uncovering things that most people don't know about. And that's a practice, you know. But you know, the steady gaze. You know, those are the eyes on the Gampa, the unflinching gaze. We want to know what this laboratory, this environment is that we live in. We should know. And then we should do what we can, do our very best to help make it better. That's my philosophy.
So in that hour, can you reach a state of equanimity about all those apparently whatever challenges?
Well, I wouldn't go so far as to say that. I hold it. I call the heart of Hazara Nayak Khan and of Sam Lewis the heart of accommodation. They held it. They knew it. They knew what was going on. Yes, I mean, to my best ability with these practices.
Yeah, I think his own Dalai Lama gave a very good answer. Someone asked him, does he still get angry? He says, naturally I do, but day by day I recover more quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I recover.
Just have to keep doing that, refocusing.
And two, you know, I don't get a sense that equanimity is inaction or not caring at all. It's using these practice tools to actually, you know, if I'm feeling this deep grief, again, I'll go towards that deep grief and bring it into my system and then see what happens. And again, the Dalai Lama, somebody, you know, that's a practice of Tonglen. He was doing this. The person who was interviewing him at the time knew what he had gone into. They just passed a part in India where there's a lot of pain, and
they
passed an area where in India where there was a lot of suffering. It was very clear, and the Dalai Lama stopped the interview and started, you know, doing this practice. He didn't say what it was, but the interviewer was sophisticated and said, "So, did you stop to do Tonglen?" And to which he said, "Yes, I did." And so then he said, the interviewer said, "Do you think it helped?" And he said, "Well, I don't know if it helped, but it certainly helped me."
And that, if it helps you, mm-hmm. and you then turn to somebody else from a peaceful place, then that peace is spreading. Because if you live in a household, if one person gets snitty in the household, you know, it's very contagious. You become a little snitty to somebody else. And peace is the same. It's very contagious. So we know that these practices are spreading out. Even if, when we say, may all beings be well, we know that at least from person to person, it is radiating out. The peace that we can develop within ourselves. We know at least that much. Maybe we can't prove the metaphysics of beyond that, but that's maybe the best we can do in this world. But there's nothing else to do. So what else are we going to do? Well, there's more attachment. You know, you're attached. It's your kitchen. And you're sharing it with hundreds of people. This is a poem from translated by Robert Bly from Kabir. I said to the wanting creature inside me, What is this river you want to cross? There are no travelers on the river road and no road. Do you see anyone moving about on the bank or nesting? There's no river at all and no boat and no boatman. There's no tow rope either and no one to pull it. There is no ground, no sky, no time, no bank, no ford. And there is no body and no mind. Do you believe there is some place that will make the soul less thirsty? In that great absence, you will find nothing. Be strong then and enter into your own body. There you have a solid place for your feet. Don't go off somewhere else. Kabir says this, just throw away all thoughts of imaginary things and stand firm in that which you are. So, I think peace depends on our relationship to what is, to the events around us, and not to the events themselves. And if we can sit in the midst of it all with our hearts open, in touch with the peace within that does not depend on conditions, then we can be at peace with the world, even though there may not be peace in the world. And Kalu Rinpoche said it this way, one of my favorite quotes of all time.
Previous.
Yes. You live in illusion and the appearance of things. There is a reality. You are that reality. When you recognize this, you realize that you are nothing. And being nothing, you are everything. So let's just close our eyes for just a minute. May all beings know their Buddha nature. Svaha. Ami. And thank you. Maybe we dedicate together with may all beings.
May all beings be well.
For those of us who are